Support comes from Kenai Feed, mile 14.5 K Beach Road, with high tunnels, gardening supplies, and animal feed. Open 9:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. KenaiFeed.com.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain come tumbling down.
All right, Glacier. I'm doing the wrong radio show, folks. Welcome, friends, to Growing a Greener Kenai with me, Larry Opperman. And I'm so happy to have you here with me on this absolutely fantastic Central Kenai Peninsula morning. It's starting to cloud up a little bit, but boy, it was nice this morning, wasn't it? A little bit early this morning, nice blue sky. We're warming up. And boy, it's just going to be a fantastic day. We've obviously got an early summer, which is fantastic. I mean, I'm loving that, and I'm sure we all are. And we're going to talk a little bit about that here in a minute, about being patient and getting our gardens going. So, and I know the young lady announcing right there before the show started the weather, but you know, for our area up here, it's 42 right now. We're partly sunny, gonna get up by around 50. It's gonna start raining again maybe later on this afternoon or tonight. Tomorrow we're gonna have about 50, and it looks like pretty much for the whole week we're going to have a chance of rain almost the whole week, but we're going to be in the 50s. Tuesday night, we're getting into the 30s at night. Not much really too bad that's going to hurt anything, but it's still a little bit cold, and it's a little bit early to get things out there. And like I said, right now, patience is the key. Man, we want to get out there and start gardening, but it's just a little bit early. And we'll talk about that in a minute, too. I want to make a couple of announcements here, and I do that every week. One of the things that's coming up, now we are in the month of May, and if you are looking for some particular gardening soil amendments, the Central Peninsula Garden Club is having their annual soil amendment fundraiser at Kenai Feed. And what that means, you can go directly to Kenai Feed, talk to Sarah or whoever's working out there, and there's four items you can get that, based on the sales for the month of May, Sarah at Kenai Feed will donate a certain amount of money to the Central Peninsula Garden Club. And it's usually a pretty good chunk of money every year, a couple thousand dollars at least going to the Central Peninsula Garden Club. So we want to thank Sarah for always supporting the Garden Club. But the four items you can get from Kenai Feed, and it's just for the month of May, is the Kodiak Fishbone Meal. That is a high phosphorus. That's a good good amendment to get. Four Corners of Vermicompost, which is some worm poop mixed in with some compost. You can get some agricultural lime, and then you can get worm castings, and those typically come from Michael at Grandpa's Worms. And unfortunately, Michael is going to retire. So I would recommend, if you want to get some worm castings, and I've still got some from last year. I've got one bag left from last year. And I'm thinking I might go out there and I might stock up a little bit, because that stuff doesn't go bad or anything. I mean, it's in a good sealed bag. And I had about a bag and a half left. And I've been using that bag from last year to kind of put in my my beds and beef that puts those microbes back in the soil. So anyway, that helps out the Central Peninsula Garden Club so much. So like I said, that's just for the month of May. So head out and get your stuff there, and don't forget just for the month of May. All right, and then one of the next things that's going on, I want you guys to, it's a little early still, obviously, but be sure to keep watching. Coming up in the next month or so, some of our farmers markets are going to be firing up again. So I'll make some announcements in the future about when they're going to open up. But it's, like I said, it's a little early now. There might be some of our local farmers who have got some things just about ready in their greenhouses, their high tunnels or whatever. But anyway, I'll make some future announcements on that. One of the things too that the Garden Club is doing is every year they do a bunch of tours of local gardeners. Now, by being a member of the Garden Club, you get priority on signing up for a garden tour before if there's a certain amount of spots available. If you're not a member of the club, then you're can be on a potentially a wait list, or you sign up at the bottom of the list. So gardening club members will do that, and that schedule will be coming out in the future. And if you want to check to see what's going on with the Garden Club, go to sinpingardenclub.org and check everything out there, and you, go to their events page and see what's going on, and see what's going on there. So anyway, let's see what else we got here. Oh, and one of the things that the club's doing this year, the club is having a Central Peninsula Club contest. They've got a contest, and they got three categories. They've got flowers, show off the floral varieties, the vibrant blooms, color, overall design. Vegetables, you get some huge vegetables, perfectly shaped carrots, that kind of stuff. And then depending on how you use recycled and upcycled materials in your garden. So anyway, that is another item coming up this year. And one of the biggest things I want to talk about, which is absolutely fantastic, which is going on this summer. And this isn't the Garden Club, but one of the things that is happening is I lost my train of thought there. Training. Every Tuesday at 5:30 in the evening, Casey Matney, our wonderful Casey Matney from the Extension Center, is running a Zoom class. And I'll tell you what, if Casey was doing this on KDLS, I mean, I'd be out of a job doing the Garden Club, because this, I've been taking his, and they're free, I've been sitting in on his classes so far, and they are absolutely fantastic. Casey is such a knowledgeable instructor, but they started on April 8th, it's called Seed Starting from Scratch was his first one, Large Seed Starts. April 22nd was soil testing and interpretation for garden farms, and that was a fantastic, fantastic class. His last class on April 29th was working with fertilizers and compost. And the next class, which is happening this Tuesday, May 6th, it's on raised rows, raised beds, and how to make them. So you can get a link to these classes in two locations. You can go to the Central Peninsula Garden Club homepage site. And, you go to the home part and you go down the line, you go past where the contest is, and then you will see a variety of Zoom gardening meetings. If you click on that thing that says community events page, you click on that, and that has the link to the next classes. And they go up through June 17th. And the other place you can get that is go to the Cooperative Extension Service location, and you can find their training in the training section. When you look at the let me think. Yeah, you look at the calendar, 2025 Spring Gardening Webinar Series, and the links are all there. And it'll be on the right. It says Zoom link. And you can click on those, and I recommend going in about 5:28 or 5:25, and Casey will be on screen, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful class. I think that would be fantastic For anybody, if you're a new gardener or an experienced gardener, I'll tell you what, it is worth it to sit through Casey's training. Okay, and then one of the other big things I just about forgot that the Garden Club is doing is their annual plant sale. The annual plant sale is on June the 7th, and there is, in fact, a new location for the plant sale, June the 7th. The plant sale now will be held at 35109 Royal Place, which is Alaska Christian College, in their parking lot. So if you know where we've all been going out to Kenai Peninsula College for the monthly meetings, and they had the plant sale in the KPC parking lot last year. Well, this year it's at Alaska Christian College. And if you don't know where that is, as you're going down East Poppy Lane to get down to KPC, just before there is a street called Royal Place. Just before you get to that intersection where you turn down into the college, you get down in there, and just the street before that is Royal Place. And for you folks that shop there, it's the same little road that Poppy Lane Flowers is on. So at the end of Royal Place is Alaska Christian College. That's where the plant sale is. We would sure love to have our members. One of the things, it's another one of the major, major fundraising events for the club. And that is one of the things that helps the Garden Club every year garner some funds. And one of the things you can do for the club is, in fact, grow some plants, because it all works on donations. It works on donations, and it'll be on June the 7th, and it usually, let's see, I'll find out. I can't remember whenever it starts, but I'll find that. But grow some things. If you're starting your stuff from seeds, do a couple of 4-packs or 6-packs of whatever you're growing. It doesn't matter. Broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, you name it, lettuce, whatever. And plant a couple of extra of those for the garden club, and to donate them. Because I tell you what, it is a popular event. And it's going to be... It's going to be a big, and you got to get there early. Most of you folks know you've got to get there early or everything is gone. So anyway, that's June the 7th, and I'll be announcing that again. But yeah, plan a couple little items for the garden club to donate, and more information. I'll have more information on that, on like where to take your plants. Usually we have people drop them off right at where the sale's going to be. So we can do that. And we got plenty of time. I got more information for you. But the point is, right now, get those things going right now, so you've got them ready to go for the plant sale. And for you folks that have been to the plant sale before, it's, like I said, you got to get there early. People are standing in line. They're really good things. The prices are great. And there should be a little bit of everything there. There'll be vegetables and flowers, trees, typically trees, shrubs, raspberry bushes, you just about name it, and you've got something you can get for your garden ready to go. So anyway, I think that's it on the announcements. And I guess the last announcements I want to make is some of our upcoming guests. We haven't got a date yet, but once again, we will have Joe Lample of Growing a Greener World fame, nationally known horticulturalist, shows on NPR. He's been on Good Morning America and the Today Show. Joe is so knowledgeable, and Joe will be on with me again this summer one time, but haven't got a date locked in yet with Joe. And then coming up on June 21st, for you folks that would be interested and maybe thinking about this, but Sarah and Rupert from Kenai Feed will be on with me, and we're going to be talking about high tunnels, what kind to get, what they're good for, And I'm sure they can also help out with the program, you know, where you can get some money from the state. If those monies are going to be flowing now with what's been going on in Washington, in D.C., with cutting funds back everywhere. But I'm sure Sarah and Rupert. So anyway, we look forward to the 21st of June to get Sarah and Rupert in the studio with me here. And we'll talk about high tunnels and everything that Kenai Feed has to offer. So, and I also want to remind folks coming up in on May 23rd and 24th. Now, this isn't a garden thing, but on May 23rd and 24th is going to be the annual spring fundraiser for KDLL. You know, there's a spring fundraiser and there's a fall fundraiser. And one of the things that's really cool is I've been able to procure some prizes from some of our local gardening folks, you know. And I'll give you, for instance, Darren at Trinity donated some gift cards to us to give away during the fundraiser. So we sure hope if you would listen to that, have a chance to win you a gift card to Trinity. We've got some other gift cards in local businesses around the area, and we'd love to have you listen and maybe participate in that program with us on those 2 days, and help support KDLL and maybe help even support what's going on in your garden. So, okay. Well, one of the things I was going to talk about today too is I've got it in big letters on my notes, and that is the word patience. Patience, patience. Now, I've got a friend out there whose name is Patience, and I'm not talking about her. Patience, if you're listening, I'm not talking about you. We're talking about the other type of patience. Stay patient. I know, folks, we want to get out there and we want to garden. We want to make things happen. We want to get going. It is so tough right now. Boy, I tell you, I want to get out there and I want to start putting everything out there. But you know, it's a little bit early. It is a little bit early for that. And now some of you folks with a greenhouse or a high tunnel, you can kind of get things fired up a little bit more, a little bit earlier than most of us. But, you know, I've got everything in my greenhouse. And I call mine a greenhouse. And I don't know if I really should call it a greenhouse. Most greenhouses are typically a true greenhouse. It actually has heat, everything. I guess I call mine a greenhouse, but it's not heated, and I guess you might want to more call it a hothouse. I don't know, you know, because it still gets cold in there at night. A true greenhouse with heat, you can still keep that thing fired up and warm through the night. So I've told you folks this before, but what I've got is in my greenhouse, I've got my mini greenhouse, and I've just got from any big box store, I got the plastic shelves, and I used an extra section from one of my other ones that I wasn't using, and I made it a little bit taller, and then I wrapped the whole thing in a plastic like you can get at any big box store. And then I've got the front of it fixed up where it rolls up, and I got Velcro on it, and it helps to hold the front up to let the natural heat get in during the day if the sun's out. So, but what I do at night is I roll that, and you know, and if it's a really cloudy day, I keep that front rolled down, and then it keeps it warm in there. But at night, when it does get down into the 30s, I roll it down, and on the very bottom shelf, I've got a heater, and I've got my remote thermometer in my little greenhouse. And that lets me know what the temps have been. So last night, before I went to bed, you know, I had the heater on in there, and I can manage the heater from in the house because I got a breaker that goes out to the greenhouse. So I can flip that breaker off instead of having to walk out to the greenhouse. So it gets, you know, like at night, my little mini greenhouse, it typically stays about 65 to 70 degrees, depending on how cold it is at night. And I tell you what, folks, I've been successful when we've had cooler springs. I've been successful in keeping my little mini greenhouse in the big greenhouse up in the 70 range, even when it was like 10 degrees. And we've had some of those springs where at night it's still getting really cold. So it, for me, it works. And right now, everything I've got in my little greenhouse, it is in my mini greenhouse, in the big greenhouse, it is doing fantastic. Almost everything's up. I had a few things where I had poor germination, and I'll give you for instance, I saw an ad for a broccoli. It was called Russian Giant Broccoli, and I saw a picture. I'm like, wow, those are the biggest broccoli heads I've ever seen in my life. Well, I ordered some of those seeds, and they weren't expensive, and I thought, I'm going to give that a try. Not a single one germinated. Not a one. So I was disappointed with that. I've got a couple other things where I've just had mediocre germination. I've got other things I've got. I got such germination. If I could plant every plant that's germinated in my little mini, that little mini greenhouse, man, I could feed all the Kenai Peninsula, definitely in the Soldotna area, because everything is up and everything else is up and doing well. And I'm hoping we do get a little bit warmer, because my corn that I pre-sprout, it's on the top shelf of my little mini greenhouse. It's doing fantastic, and it's approaching a foot tall. So here pretty soon, I'm gonna have to get that out of my little mini and get it planted in the greenhouse and in the bed I've got prepared for that. So anyway, we'll see how that goes. But anyway, like I said, the word is patience. Now, when I say the word patience, that's kind of getting into, well, let's see, that's kind of getting into the fact of, you know, you can't put your beans out right now. You know, you can't put a tomato outside or anything like that outside. It's too cold to get a squash plant out there. But what you can do now is there are some things that you can, in fact, think about planting outdoors. And I'm planning on doing that this week one day. I mean, it's only May the 3rd. But, you know, when you look at some plant tolerances, you look at, there's like four types of tolerance. And I'll get into those in a minute. And one of the things with the sun come up, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit. One of the things with the sun coming up, and I've had folks ask me this before. Some of you folks keep your water, you know, like I've told you before, I've got barrels in my greenhouse painted flat black, and I got three barrels that sit there with they're just there for a heat sink. The sun beats down on them during the day, and those barrels warm up, and then they release that heat at night when it kind of cools down. And then I've got my one other barrel that is painted flat black, and I put big plastic trash bag down in it, you know, to keep rust or anything like that from getting in the water that I want to water a plant. And then that warms up, and then I use that to water a lot of my plants in the greenhouse whenever they start developing. But one of the things people have mentioned to me before is when they're staying, especially some of those big, I always forget what they're called, not a carboy, but those big containers that are big and square with a metal frame around and that people put water in, and they might collect their rent, whatever. But those tend to grow algae sometimes. So people are like, how do I keep the algae out of that? Well, one of the things you can do there, and this kind of freaks out a lot of people, but just put a little bit of bleach in that water. And I want to give you an example. Let's say I've got, and you don't need much. You don't need much bleach. Let's say I've got a 50-gallon barrel of water. And I want to get just a little bit of bleach in there that prevents algae growth. Well, you know, one of the things that you do there is algae, it doesn't take much to keep algae from blooming in your water, especially in some of those clear containers. So what I mean by that, there's a little formula you can use to determine, and you don't want a lot of bleach. It doesn't take much to prevent algae from growing. So there's a formula you can use, and it's really simple. It's called CV times CV1 and 2 CV1 C1V1 equals C2V2. And what that means is the concentration of bleach times the volume equals the second concentration of bleach times the volume. So what I'm trying to explain to you is typical bleach off the counter at the grocery store is 5% solution. Now you get, they advertise the higher solution, it's 8%. So what that means is a 5% solution of typical off-the-shelf bleach is 50,000 parts per million, because there's a million parts per million in a pure solution. So 5% of that is 50,000. For if you're using the 8% bleach, that's 80,000 parts per million. So what you do is you do this CV1 equals CV2. So what that means is, let's say you've got a 50-gallon container and you want to have only 2 parts per million in that 50-gallon container of water you put in there. And I say 2 parts per million because for drinking water systems around the country, the standard chlorine disinfectant residual when your drinking water comes out the tap, now I'm not talking about folks on a well, city drinking water systems, distribution system, is 1 part per million. That is the drinking water, pretty much the drinking water standard. You start getting much higher than that, you start getting up into 2, 3, maybe 4 parts per million. If they have drill, you'll start smelling the bleach. That means there's too much. So anyway, it doesn't take much to keep algae from growing in your water. So what I mean by that, how this works is, let's say you want to find out how much bleach do I need to put in a 50-gallon container of water, a 50-gallon barrel of water, to make it 2 parts per million in that barrel. So what you do is you've got your 50,000 off-the-shelf bleach. So you've got $50,000 times X, because you want to find out what that volume is, equals 2 parts per million times 50 gallons. Okay, so what you do is you do a simple equation. You take that 50,000 on the left side of your formula and you move it over to the other side and divide. So you've got 2 parts per million times 50 gallons divided by 50,000. So I'm going to take my, and in 50 gallons of water, there are, let's see, 100, there's 6,400 ounces of water, 128 ounces in a gallon. So you take 6,400 ounces times 2 parts per million, that's 12,800, and divide it by 50,000. That equals 0.256 ounces of water, of bleach, that you need to put into that 50-gallon barrel. That gives you 2 parts per million. Now, that's not going to always stay 2 parts per million, because some of it's going to oxidize, taking care of killing any algae or any nasties in there. So it won't stand there. But what that do, something that small can potentially keep algae from growing in your water. And let's say, I'll do a quick one here. Let's say you want to put 5 parts per million in that barrel. So you would take 5 times 64 ounces and you divide it by your 50,000 again. And you need 0.6. You need 0.6 of an ounce of bleach to make 5 parts per million in that 50-gallon barrel of water. And you can do these calculations. It doesn't matter if I wanted to put 100 parts per million in. You know, you just change the numbers out of what you want to achieve. You know, so anyway, I don't hope that's not too convoluted for you. But the one of the points I'm trying to make is that little bit of bleach isn't going to hurt your plants. You know, like I said, if you've been watering plants, if you live in the city and you're watering plants and you're using tap water, you're hitting them with one part per million of a bleach. And like I said, once it hits those plants and it hits the ground, it's pretty much oxidizing. And that one part per million is pretty much gone. That's what it's supposed to be at the tap in your kitchen, one part per million, if you're on a city water system or distribution. It's totally different if, obviously, if you've got a well or you're saving rainwater or anything. But the point is it can keep algae from growing in your water containers. And it's a couple parts per million isn't going to hurt your plants, and it's going to keep that algae growing, which if we've all done it, is a real pain in the butt. So anyway, I didn't mean to diverge on that too much, but that's just it's a simple calculation to let you decide. And you can do that with anything. You know, like, for instance, I saw I can't remember. I think if it was on the Extension Center or so about cleaning last year's planters, you know, your pots and everything, and they recommend putting a cup of water in a gallon of a cup of bleach in a gallon of water. I'm like, holy cripes, that is, I mean, it's not going to hurt anything, but it's way more than is needed. Now, bleach is pretty cheap, but it's way more than it's needed. And a cup of bleach and a gallon of water. And like I said, it's going to be even stronger. If you're using the 8% bleach, it's going to even be even stronger. Man, that gets sensitive to the nose. If you got sensitive hands, sensitive skin, you know, wear gloves. And you got to really rinse. Be sure to rinse your stuff real well that you're washing, because that is way more than is necessary. It's a good rule of thumb, I guess, and it's easier than telling folks what I told them. Yeah, just put a teaspoon of water in your barrel. That's plenty. That'll do you, you know. So anyway, that's one of the things to be kind of careful about. Don't be sure you rinse everything real well. But anyway, I'm trying to express that 2 parts per million. In a barrel, maybe even 3, 4, 5 parts per minute, it's not going to hurt your plants. It's going to keep the algae from growing in those big containers of water. And like we said, if you've ever had that happen, it's a pain in the rear trying to deal with that stuff, especially if you've got a little pump in there. So anyway, I'm going to get back finally to what, when we're talking about plant temperatures, you know, and I want to say that, you know, different plants feature different tolerances toward cold temps and frost tolerance. There's a difference between being able to deal with the cold and deal with frost. So we're looking at 4 types of tolerance. You look at cold hardy, frost tolerant, frost sensitive, and warm loving plants. You know, so you've got to be careful on what and when you plant them and where you plant them. And one of the reasons is frost tolerant plants, if you've ever, I know a lot of you gardeners have heard this before, for instance, they say some plants, as they mature, if a frost gets them, they get sweeter. Well, one of the reasons they get sweeter is the plant recognizes that it's getting cold. The liquids that are down in its root system has sugar in it. That sugar transmits up, the plant brings that sugar up into itself, and it sweetens it up. So if they say broccoli's better, leeks are better, there's things that are better after a frost. Brussels sprouts are supposed to be way better if you let them go through a good frost, because that sugar water that's in the roots comes up in there. And it stays up in there because sugar water freezes at temperatures less than 32 degrees, which is the freezing point of water. So that's why they say when you look at a frost-tolerant plant, they get sweeter. They typically get sweeter. You know, so, but some of the things when we're talking about, and like I said, I mention these things because right now patience is the key in gardening. As much as we want to get out there and garden, and I'll give you for instance, I do have some other broccoli plants and some cabbage. I've got some things going. Well, especially this year, I will probably put those out in my garden in about 10 days, typically mid-May. But even though they are pretty frost tolerant, a really bad freeze can kind of get to them a little bit. And as we all know, the safe day for us is June the 1st. That's the really safe day. So what I do is I will put them out in my garden, like I said, here in about 10 days or so. And I've got my old milk jugs with the bottom cut out, and I'll set those over each plant. And that is just a way to make sure that they are protected a little bit. And then typically, they're out there for a couple of weeks, and then it's generally pretty safe to go ahead and take those milk jugs off. So there's some things you can do to help prevent those. But if you want to, getting ahead of myself. And some of the things that are, in fact, pretty frost tolerant, pretty cold hardy right now that you can almost think about getting in the ground right now is like, beets, your broccoli, like I said, it's getting close. You could probably, this week I was actually looking at maybe planting beets and carrots and parsnips out in the garden. It's going to take them a little while to think about germinating and coming up. You can get your kale going out there. And we know rhubarb, everybody's rhubarb, but gosh, our rhubarb's probably, I don't know, eight inches tall already. We all know that. People's garlic is coming up already, but lettuce, mustard greens, you can get all that stuff going now, and takes it a little, but now I'm talking about from seed, and it's going to take that a little while to germinate and get fired up in the garden. And I'll tell you what I'm doing in my greenhouse too, if I'm going to do it when I get home after the show today, is, the bush beans I've got for green beans, those are typically a 60 or 65 day maturity time. Well, what I'm going to grow in my greenhouse right now is I'm going to transplant some of my lettuce starts in the greenhouse in one of the beds. And I'll get some lettuce, maybe some mustard greens. I'll get a few things now, waiting for it to warm up enough where it's not that cold at night, waiting for it to warm up enough where I can get my green beans going in one full bed in my greenhouse. But I've got plenty of time to grow some other items in there for the next month before it's time to even put the green bean seeds in and get those fired up. But you can, and you can get, potentially get your cabbage going already. Like I said, we gotta take care of that stuff though, and, pay attention. So whenever we look at frost tolerance, one of the things you want is a spring minimum temperature of about 36 degrees. Now we prefer it much higher than 36. Kind of one of those rules of thumb was 50 to 60 degrees soil temperature before you start planting things. And you can typically get in, and like I said, this is where I'm doing it, and you can transplant some of these things about 2 weeks prior to the last frost. So that to me is about mid-May, a couple weeks prior to the last frost, you can get those things out there. So be time to maybe get even get some radishes in the ground here pretty soon. My celery's doing well in my little mini greenhouse. We'll get radishes going. Probably about mid-May, I'll get out in the garden. I'll get some peas going, get my celery going, cauliflower, and get those items out there a little bit as we get into the season. And then we're looking at frost-sensitive items that you get out there. Well, frost-sensitive items are corn, tomatoes, beans, most herbs, some flowers, so you've got to be real careful of that. And up here in Alaska, I still have not found anybody. Well, I shouldn't say that. One of our garden club members, Lee and Tara Brewer, they live a little bit south of town, out past the landfill a little ways. They are very successful with growing tomatoes outdoors, but they've got a wonderful, south-facing area on the back side of their house, a poured concrete deck pad out there. That's basically their back porch, ground level, and they plant some beautiful tomatoes, but they're right up against the house, so the house is a heat sink, which releases its heat, and it warms up more during the day, and their tomatoes do well outdoors, but they're up against the house, and they've got a place, like I said, to garner some of that residual heat, some of that residual heat that's coming off the house, which helps take care of those tomatoes and helps protect those tomatoes. And as I've told you before, I've grown tomatoes outdoors in my garden in a little raised bed before that were a cold hardy variety. And boy, they grew, they flowered. I would pollinate them. You know, I take my little, I've told you before, I take my little kids' cheap electric toothbrush and hit those flowers. You see a little poof of pollen come out. But it's cold enough at night, and there's no residual heat going on to them, and they won't set fruit. Everything else looks beautiful, but they won't set fruit. So I've kind of given up on that. And I guess I could try putting a little remake cloth, putting a little hoop house over them, and see what that does. So anyway, but for the warm loving plants, you typically need a spring minimum temperature of about 50 degrees. And that's one of the things. And then even that is when you're looking at the warm items that like warm, want to transplant maybe 1 to 2 weeks after the last frost, which getting real close, that is about the time, 1 week is about the time that the garden club plant sale is. So if you're going to the plant sale and you're getting cauliflower and you're getting some of these plants, there's still plenty of time to get them in your garden and get them fired up and get them going. So yeah, June 7th for the plant sale, that's not too late in the year to start getting some of these going, especially if it's some of the shorter variety plants. Like you can get a broccoli plant that you can get broccoli plants that mature in 90 days or like 63 days or so. So kind of depends on what you're growing. And obviously one of the things that all gardeners know, I hope all gardeners know it, and for any of you that might be novice at this, if you do get your plants somewhere else, or even if you're starting from seed yourself, you've got to harden them off. You can't just take that plant that's been in nice warm weather and just whack, take it outside and plant it in the ground. It just doesn't do it. It's not going to happen. It's going to probably kill that plant. Some of them might survive, but for the most part, they are not going to survive. So you've got to harden them off, which means on day one, take your plants out, get them outdoors in some nice sun for like 30 minutes. Then the next day, you do it again the next day. You get them out there and you leave them out there maybe an hour. And then the next, you take them back in. Then the next day, you get them out there and you leave them out there for 2 hours. And then the next day, 3 hours. And then at about the end of the week, like the sixth or seventh day, you know, like by the third day, should be out there 2 hours. The fourth day, maybe 2 hours. Fifth day, 4 hours. Sixth day, 8 hours. And they should be hardened off. Now that plant is used to being, it gets what's called hardening off, and it's ready to plant outdoors. And you've got a pretty good chance of that start surviving. So yeah, don't just take those plants right from in the house or wherever you've got them and zap them outdoors. I even harden them off in my greenhouse, you know. And one of the ways I do that, there again, like I said, with some of my starts, is on my little mini greenhouse, I just roll the front of it up. And then in a little while, they start doing well. And then here pretty soon, I've got a couple of sawhorses out in front of my greenhouse in my garden area. And with a big sheet of plywood on, I'll start setting them out there for, like I said, that hour a day. Then I'll put them back in the little mini greenhouse and then leave the front rolled up. And the only time I'll roll that front down is if the temperature really starts to drop due to cloud or if we get some really cold weather. And then here pretty soon I'll quit turning the heater on at night, and those things will have to go through the night. And hopefully, and like I said, I can watch that in the house with my little remote thermometer to know, man, I got to give them a little heat, and that'll go. So anyway, that's one of the things to watch out for when you're doing that. And as of most of gardeners know, you can't grow a cucumber outdoors up here, or at least in our growing zone 4A and 4B. And if anybody has ever been successful with that, shoot me an email at growingagreenerkenai.org and let me know. growingagreenerkenai@gmail.com and let me know if in fact you've been successful growing cucumbers outdoors, because I'll tell you what, that is a tough one, and the odds of that happening are slim. Okra, man, even Bobby Jackson asked one time, and we all know how good a fantastic gardener Bobby is she's even asked before, has anybody had success with okra? I've tried okra a couple times in my greenhouse, hot house, and I'll tell you what, they start growing up, and then all of a sudden they just stop. And if you remember the history of okra, it's an African plant that was brought over during the 1800s, during the slave trade, and the Africans brought the okra over, and it wants hot weather. We grow okra back in the Midwest years ago, and it grows. But I'll tell you what, maybe someone with a heated greenhouse can do it, but I kind of gave up on it. I don't even try to grow okra anymore, because my wife really loves okra, but I don't really I like it fried, but you know, you put it in that gumbo and stuff, and it's slimy. You got a big old slimy okra snot link coming out of your stew, and I'm like, no thanks. So real quick, little side note, the best way to get rid of that, though, is when you're cutting your okra up, to put it in a gumbo or something. If you put it in the skillet and fry it a little bit, it gets rid of the slime. The slime in whatever you're cooking doesn't come out if you put it in the skillet and fry it a little bit. So that's what my wife does if she's going to make anything with okra, and it works. It works wonderful. Now, I love fried okra, but we figured out that you got to fry it a little bit, the little slices that you put in. It'll de-slime your gumbo or your soup or whatever it is you're doing there. So anyway, I keep mentioning this stuff because you got to be patient right now. Now, one of the other things I'm going to plant probably this week is my potatoes. And you all know I've talked about potatoes a lot because it takes a little while for those potatoes to break through the soil. And potatoes don't like frost, but it takes a little while for that greenery to break through the ground. So if there's a chance of a frost coming up and the greenery, the plant part has broken through the ground, be sure you get them covered. You know, even just a plastic sheet, anything to cover them. So yeah, it's time. I've got my potatoes. I got my seed potatoes, and they are they're probably going to go in the ground this week one day, and I'll leave them outside. And I've told you before, I grow mine in containers, and I don't keep them in my garden proper with the big fence around it, because moose don't like potatoes. They leave the potatoes alone. They don't like them. I don't know about other parts of the country if deer like them or not, but I know when we used to plant potatoes back in the Midwest years ago, they never got eaten by anything, so I would assume it's the same way. But anyway, moose don't like potatoes. They don't like garlic. They don't like the alliums, you know, so I typically plant my garlic outside the garden proper. I plant onions outside the garden proper because they don't like those things, and it lets you use that more high-priced real estate within your fencing to grow the things that moose do like to eat. Unfortunately, the things that moose like to eat is a lot of times what people like to eat, like your broccoli, your cauliflower, your cabbage, you know. And those dang moose, I know sometime in the back, in the past, I saw a picture of someone up here. I might have been on the Garden Club Facebook page years ago. that the moose, you know, unfortunately, they won't just stop and eat a complete cabbage. They'll take a big bite out of the middle, then they'll walk to the next cabbage and take one bite out of the middle and do that. And the picture showed a whole row of cabbage with just one big bite out of the center of each cabbage head, you know. And it wouldn't be so bad. Just eat one, you goofy moose. But that doesn't work that way. Their brains don't work that way. So anyway, when we're talking about getting these things going, and I say the word again, patience. Like I said, the things that take a little while to germinate, you can get going. I'm going to try this week. I've never done it this early, but I'm gonna plant some carrots, some beets, some parsnips. I'm gonna get them by seed in the ground this week, and just see how they do this early in the year. For everything I've read about, they ought to be just fine. So, like I said, some of these things will be good. Maybe some bok choy, that ought to be good. Maybe even some radishes. And if there looks like there's going to be a really hard frost after these things have popped up, I can always cover them with a sheet of plastic, and they'll probably be okay, you know. So, anyway, that's one of the things to watch out for. But patience is the key right now, folks. Don't get as much as, I'll tell you what, it's tough though. And you all know what I mean. You know, you go out there in the garden, especially kids doing this, you go out in the garden and you get out there and you plant seeds in the ground and you go back in the house and like 3 hours later, you're going out there and go, how they doing? Is anything up yet? You know, and kids really like to do that. We just planted them 3 hours ago. They're not growing yet. Well, I better go look and see just in case. You know, so, and I want to do the same thing. I think a lot of gardeners are like that. Said, well, I planted seeds. Anything going on? You go out and you look the next day. Anything up yet? Dang, nothing's up yet. So it just we all are always so excited to do that. So anyway, the weather, though, is a very important thing. And like I said, this time of year, we are, depending on what you're growing, you might be playing with a little fire. And you folks remember a couple of years ago where we had a pretty good frost in the middle of July. And obviously wasn't a killing frost, but it was still, remember a couple of years ago, we had a pretty good cool frost a couple days in a row here in the Central Peninsula, you know. So anyway, getting into weather, you know, folks ought to know that climate and weather are not the same. So we're looking at climate, we're looking at long-term trends. You know, the scientists that are saying temperatures are going up, we've got climate change going on right now. Well, climate is a long-term trend, and weather is a short-term item, you know. So that's what we have to deal with. We know, and when you talk about climate, and I'd have to look back again, but Marty and I have, my wife and I have been up in Alaska now for we're coming up on our 34th anniversary of being in Alaska here in June. And there are more growing days now than there were 34 years ago. I'd have to look at the stats and see how many. But the number of growing days has gone up, and that because there has been some climate change. And I won't want to get into that argument or anything. But anyway, when you're looking at that climate and where we are, obviously, most of us know, as you know, the zone map changed for Alaska here, a couple of years ago. But it's still not absolute for our Soldotna. So Soldotna area and Kenai and kind of around, we're in what's called Zone 4B. Now there's some other zones, 4A, 4B, and we have so many microclimates around here. And as I've mentioned before, when my wife and I lived out at Sterling, we didn't have a lot. We weren't on the Kenai River, but we were one lot back from the Kenai River, and we were down low. Well, I'll tell you what, everything was at least 2 weeks behind, 2 to 3 weeks behind down where we lived in that low spot that got colder compared to just up on the Sterling Highway. Our trees would just be budding, and plants would just be starting to bud down where we lived went up on the Sterling Highway, maybe a couple hundred feet in elevation, they would all be leaved out. And our stuff was still just starting to go, just starting to sprout. So that's what we mean by microclimates. It's certain spots are colder, so you might be a little bit colder somewhere else, just down the road, a mile down the road. It could be a totally different weather pattern and typical climate as far as zones is concerned. And for us, as we've said before, our estimated last frost here is June the 1st. That is the typical day we use. Now, Homer, they're in zone like 5. They're getting down 5, in some areas it's 6. Their estimated last frost is May the 1st. So they're a whole month ahead of us on frost. You know, so that makes it different for those guys down there. And if you look at the Department of Agriculture, you look at the zone map, you can see the areas that all around the state that what that is. And as we know, what the zone means, it's pretty much tied a lot of gardening information. When we look at that, it's typical for perennials. There's things that they're just not going to survive the winter underground. Now, what do we have that survives the winter underground up here? Our jonquils, tulips. We plant garlic in the fall. It survives. Crocus. There are certain things that will come back each year. The Egyptian walking onions, those things will come back. They tend to survive. There are things that will, in fact, survive the winter. And what I did this year, and unfortunately it didn't work, I left some carrots in the ground in one of my raised beds, thinking that I'll see how they come back next year, because they are a biennial and they go to seed the next year. Onions are biennial. They go to seed the next year. And I wanted to see if it would work just leaving them in the ground. Well, they're gone. The whatever's got in there and ate them. I don't know if a rabbit came up, and we've had the rabbits. I told you the last show, had the rabbits in the garden. I'm going to have to put chicken wire around the bottom of my garden, keep the darn rabbits out. And but I don't know if it like a vole, or I don't know if something else underground got them. But I went out there, and the ground's thawing, and they're gone. No carrots, so no trying to run them to seed this year. So I'll have to try something different. Have to try something different for next year. So anyway, I just want to tell folks again to be patient, be extra patient, give it a little bit of time. And if you've got any more questions on what I was talking about a little bit earlier with the parts per million stuff, or want a little shoot me an email at Growing a Greener Kenai, and I'll see what I can do to help you out with that, you know. Oh, and it is, I'm sorry, I did give you the wrong address here. It's Growing a Greener Kenai at kdll.org. So yeah, shoot me an email, and I'll do a little paper and attach it for you that explains how that works. So anyway, Well, God dang. I think you folks know by now what that means. That means I got about a minute and a half of the show left, and boy, it really went. I hope you learned a little bit today. Hope I didn't, you know, I just kept rambling. I hope some of the information I gave you was good for you, that you maybe did or didn't know, and I appreciate that. And don't forget to look at the Garden Club to get on those gardening tours. We've got one gardener, Ann Grevere, with the Garden Club. She grows the most fantastic tomatoes and peppers hydroponically in a 5-gallon bucket filled with perlite, and she uses what's called the ebb and flow method of hydroponicking. She grows them all in perlite, not in soil. She grows them in perlite. So anyway, get on those. I'm hoping to definitely get to Ann's place this year and check out how she does that. That's really interesting to me. So anyway, thanks again for listening to Grow Our Green at Kenai. I hope you enjoyed it. There's always a lot to talk about, and there's so much to talk about. It's just so hard to keep it brief. So anyway, I hope to see you 2 weeks from today at 11 o'clock right here on KDLL, 91.9 FM, Kenai and Soldotna. Happy gardening. Be patient. Remember, be patient, but try a little experimentation. Get out there, maybe plant a few lettuce seeds outdoors, all that good stuff like that. Some beets, carrots. See how it goes for you. So anyway, thanks again for listening. This is Larry. We'll see you next week.